So, welcome to our session today, our last session in my series on Everyday Jubilee. My name's Rachel Haxtema. I use she, her pronouns, and I come from Tacoma, Washington. And I'm really happy to be here and having this conversation with all of you. And I've been enriched by the resources and stories that you've shared with me. And I hope we can continue sharing a little bit today in our conversations. So today's session is on rest and taking time for wonder and taking time for play and pleasure and thinking differently maybe about some of these ideas of Sabbath in learning from womanist theologies, which have been really impactful to me in the last few years. So I hope to share a little of that with you. And then we'll close with some practices, including a contemplative art, a very simple, no art experience or technique required, but a way that I found to center myself when I need to take a breath and rest. So I'll introduce that to you as an opportunity. And this idea of forest bathing, which you may have heard of, or blue mind, which was a new phrase to me, but we'll talk a little bit about that. So I first want us, especially given the theme, to take a deep breath today. And as we did a little bit last night in the set in the Vespers service, do some reflection on the spaces you've been in this week, all that you've experienced, and maybe most, for me, most importantly, the views you took in, the fresh mountain air, what it feels like to be in this set-apart place. And for some of us extroverts, maybe it was the conversations and the connections and the feeling of reconnection with people that was also a moment of rest and renewal for you. So just taking that in mind, maybe turn to a neighbor or two or three, share a moment that found you in a place of wonder, a place of rest, a place of play, maybe some hilarity. I don't know if there were hijinks or I didn't see in many costumes this week, but if you had some experience of rest and renewal, why don't you share those stories with each other for a few minutes? What, introduce yourself if you have not met, please, and share something with your All right. What are some of the phrases, or can you share briefly in a word or three some of the experiences of wonder and play and rest? Yeah.
For me, I think the biggest sense of wonder is all the new growth of what used to be those awful orange piles.
Right, the new growth where there used to be the tailings piles that were orange. Yeah.
So healthy over there.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah.
Just to be. I mean, just to sit or stand in one place and look at the mountains, trees, whatever, just to take it, soak it all in.
Yeah, I guess I could have said porch sitting. I feel like porch sitting or, you know, is just really such a part of my time here at Holden, of just taking that time to sit and look. Yeah.
No phone calls and no news.
No phone calls, no news.
The rushing water at the creek.
Sorry, rushing water.
At the creek.
At the creek.
The fawns.
The fawns.
Yeah. The bear.
The bear. You saw the bear. Yeah, so taking it in, observing nature around us, the water, the animals.
All the kids.
Kids.
Yeah. It's been delightful this week.
Yes, and I'm sure the parents would feel a little differently about it. But yeah, I enjoy them because, I mean, our phase is done. You know?
I love it.
Yeah, small children. Is.
Just as we were ending, Mary Lou said, remembering.
Oh.
And what that meant to me was becoming a member again.
Of this community?
All that is.
Or
of all that is. Yeah.
Of all that is, yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, well, I hope you've taken in some space for this, and I hope you'll have some more before you need to leave. So we'll go just briefly back again to the biblical witness of the creation story and the Ten Commandments that give us this law, this commandment to rest. So we have in the Genesis story, by the seventh day God had finished, and on the seventh day God rested from all God's work, right? And so we have this clear understanding of creation as work and rest. God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. God rested from all the work of creating. And then in Exodus, we are commanded to keep the Sabbath day holy. 6 days you shall labor, but the seventh day is a Sabbath. Do no work. Nobody should do any work, not even your livestock, or the sojourner within your gates. God rested on the seventh day. The Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So this commandment to take time for rest. And then in the Gospels, we have Matthew, Jesus saying, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. So kind of a new kind of rest in the person and the experience of Jesus. And then I love the story of Jesus calming the storm. He's been with people. He's been preaching and talking and engaging. And Jesus needs a rest. So he takes his nap and sleeps in the boat so deeply that they have to wake him up. But there's a sense that he's done doing work. He's doing public ministry. And he notices his own physical specific needs for rest. So we can be reminded of these images of rest in the biblical stories. So Walter Brueggemann, many of you probably are very familiar with him, Old Testament scholar and expert, has a book called Sabbath as Resistance, and it's a very small book, so if it's something you're interested in exploring, it's a great resource. But he has I pulled up a couple quotes, but his idea that the Sabbath is subversive. He sees the fourth commandment as an act of trust in the subversive Exodus-causing God of the first commandment, an act of submission to the restful God, a practical divestment so that neighborly engagement rather than production and consumption define our lives. And so that idea that coming out, the Exodus-causing God, coming out of Pharaoh's Egypt, where they were working as slaves or in bonded servants to do hard, hard labor and hard work. And so this idea that out of that comes the Ten Commandments and the command to take time for rest. And now they finally can do that. And in reference to the Sabbath day and the creation story, he said God enjoyed a work stoppage. So he talks about really stopping the work for that whole day. Sabbath, an occasion for reimagining all of social life away from coercion and competition to compassionate solidarity, a pause that transforms. What is needed is given and need not be seized, right? So moving away from that desire to grab and to hold and to hang on to things and to just work, right? It's not easy, but we can be reminded that God has called us and commanded this of us. So I introduced very briefly womanism before, but here's the kind of very briefest introduction. The work of womanist theology center the experience and perspectives of black women in particular. And Alice Walker said, a womanist is to feminist as purple is to lavender. So this reminder that white feminism that had become very much in the common understanding had not taken seriously the needs and the realities and the suffering of black and brown women in particular. And so taking that very seriously, looking at race, sex, class, sexual preference, physical ability, all of those intersectional realities that are being experienced by some folks in our communities, and making that the center of our conversation, the center of our theology, because our theology changes when we do that, when we take seriously the perspectives of those who are truly suffering and truly being oppressed and marginalized in our communities. And so if we seek this positive, productive quality of life for all of us, if we're not thinking about what it takes to do that for all people, then we're not looking at the full picture, right? So we have to take those into consideration. So here's some names of some amazing womanist theologians that I highly encourage you to look for. I'll put them in the resource list. And I'll share a couple quotes from some of them. So Audre Lorde was not a theologian, but has this quote, women are powerful and dangerous. And I'm sure we're all quite familiar with the stereotypes of black women as angry, and dangerous in a lot of ways. And so that trope and that stereotype has been so harmful and so dangerous, has caused a lot of problems for Black women in our communities. And so Kelly Brown Douglas took this, I didn't separate the name of her book from her name. Kelly Brown Douglas wrote an important book called Sexuality in the Black Church, A Womanist Perspective. And I think responding to these ideas that Black women are dangerous, but not just angry or dangerous people, but sexually really problematic. And that has caused so much suffering for Black women, especially in our communities. And because of the ways that our churches has treated sexuality as taboo, it's really complicated that suffering for people. There's not a space for constructive response on things like HIV/AIDS, teen pregnancy, and then leads to, you know, homophobia, unhealthy relationships, all kinds of challenges. And so Kelly Brown Douglas writes about how Black persons should be able to enjoy the fullness of their humanity, and the church should promote theological discourse and analysis that will nurture healthier attitudes and behaviors towards sexuality, right? We have to have more open conversations about a lot of the things that have been kept kind of behind the scenes and have been taboo and have been, just like we talked about with money and debt, you know, like money and debt are shameful things for a lot of people, and sexuality is another area that has just been under wraps, and therefore we haven't created good conversations and good open dialogues about what it could mean to live in healthier relationships in all these ways. So Kelly Brown Douglas has that book. She also has a really great book about violence, and the cover has this beautiful image of the Black Madonna holding Trayvon Martin, who was killed, you know, and so it's a very specific call to addressing the suffering in the Black community around the murders of Black and Brown people. So she's an incredible writer and theologian. And then I'll talk a little bit more about the Nat Bishop, Tricia Hersey, later on. But she says, "Womanist theology believes that suffering is not redemptive. The guilt and shame we feel when we rest is due to our brainwashing from a capitalist white supremacist system." She says, "We refuse to grind, right? That grinding nature of our economic and social systems that cause us just to keep going and going and going. But usually, those who are most impacted by that culture and that system are those who work the hardest in the like most low-paid positions in our world, right? Those who do the home health care, who do hotel cleaning, those who work behind the scenes in our retail establishments and make food for us. Too often, almost all the time, it's people who are Black and Brown, and especially women, right? So taking seriously what it looks like from a womanist perspective to rest, and how can we create a world where all people can rest, where it is not a luxury to take a day off, where it is not a luxury to take a nap, where it is not a luxury to take a vacation. These things are so important, and we have to change structures in order to get to that kind of a place. And Jacqueline Grant wrote a book called White Women's Christ and Black Women's Jesus, and it's a really interesting look at our different perspectives from racial communities around how we perceive Jesus, how we perceive Christ. And she talks about God and humanity meeting through God's direct communication with poor Black women through the person of Jesus. And thinking really seriously about the significance of the humanity of Christ, but seeing servanthood not as something that could be used to reinforce obedience and, I don't know, docility?
Docility.
But to see royal divinity in this human person of Jesus, right? And so really important to think about that dynamic and the ways that actually our Christian concepts of servanthood and servant leadership can sometimes get twisted to enforce some of those paradigms of it's good to be a servant, right? It's good to take care of other people and to serve, and how that has been used to oppress people, especially those who are already in oppressed situations. So womanism is a vast field. It's growing every day. There's like more and more writers taking really seriously this perspective, and so there's incredible amounts of good new theology from womanism, and I encourage you to take a look if you haven't. So I wanted to share these stories, the first three of them come from a really specific womanist perspective, and so I wanted to share this. So As I mentioned, Tricia Percy calls herself the Nap Bishop, and she has this nap ministry, and she talks about rest being resistance. So she has a book coming out, or it's out recently. But she has a great Instagram, Facebook. If you are on social media, it's a constant reminder to take a rest, to take a breath. And so I encourage it. She has some really good, like, pithy, short quotes on her Instagram. But she also, like, hosts napping events at, like, conferences and other programs. And she said she's watched the beautiful falling asleep happen for so many people who needed rest. And so it's a really interesting way to think about rest and sleep and to imagine creating spaces where people can feel safe and can rest. And so she actually creates the space to say, you can rest here, I will watch you, I will make sure you're okay, right? And as somebody who doesn't come from that experience, it's hard for me to understand, but I have, from reading her work, it's clear that that is a need. And she said, my rest as a black woman in America suffering from generational exhaustion and racial trauma always was a political refusal and social justice uprising within my body. I took to rest and naps and slowing down as a way to save my life, resist the systems telling me to do more, and most importantly, as a remembrance to my ancestors who had their dream space stolen from them. This is about more than naps. So if we think about that generational trauma of slavery and the oppression that continues and how that actually physically impacts people's bodies, and how could we work as a community to create places of rest for those who most need it? Here's another quote. You know, she talks again about the brainwashing underground culture. Listen, learn from your history, learn from your own story. Find ways to reconnect, to connect back to your body and mind, to slow down. She calls herself the Nap Bishop, which I love. So Adrienne Marie Brown is somebody who's written a few books recently and kind of gotten a lot of attention, so you may have heard her name. Pleasure Activism is the one I'll speak specifically about, but she also, her book before that was called Emergent Strategy. And so she's kind of a scholar of the world. She's not officially in a kind of academic space, but she's really interested in thinking about our world today. And so she and about social justice activists in particular, right? And the need to not work hard on social justice issues and just to survive, but actually she realizes that we need, if we're going to survive, we need freedom, we need rest, we need pleasure. So she takes that very seriously, wrote this whole book on pleasure activism. It includes some essays from Audre Lorde and some other important black writers and thinkers. And here's some quotes from her too. So she said, each day I have a choice to numbly move through the day, to give the entire day away to some corporation that doesn't care about me, or to make the choices over, or to make choices over how I want to live the day. And if it's up to me, I choose poetry, I choose writing, I choose family, I choose love and lovemaking and cooking food and touching the earth. If it's up to me, I choose pleasure. Pleasure activism is the work we do to reclaim our whole, happy, and satisfiable selves from the impacts, delusions, and limitations of oppression and our supremacy. So she takes really seriously what pleasure could look like for us today, and she goes into some topics that are definitely taboo and not discussed openly in my church experience, in my church circles, around pleasure and sexuality, pleasure and lovemaking. And also she talks about recreational drugs and how they could be used safely to create spaces of rest and pleasure for folks. But she comes from a background of working with people who are suffering from the impacts of drugs, so she talks really explicitly about a dynamic that's needed of safety and low risk in order to make that a possibility. So I found it really helpful and careful in her understanding of how that how she engages with drugs in order to create spaces for rest. And so that might be interesting, it might be out there for some of you, but I enjoyed learning more from her in this topic. And then Reverend Yolanda Norton is a professor, she's actually a Hebrew scripture professor, and she teaches a class on Beyonce and the Hebrew Bible. And what she said was, you know, feminists 10, 20, 30 years ago would have used novels and writing and songs as a real important source for their theology. And she said, well, what, you know, today it's not going to be the novels that I read in my education. And she said, I actually connect really well with Beyonce and feels that Beyonce's music really speaks to the experience of Black women in our society today. And she connected so much to that. So she taught a whole class on making connections between Beyonce's lyrics and music and the Hebrew scriptures. And then for that class, she invited students to create a liturgy for worship using Beyonce's music after they'd studied these connections. And they offered this for an alternative service at Grace Cathedral on a Wednesday evening, and that usually had about 50 to 100 people attending. And when it got publicized that this was going to happen, they had thousands of people show up for this event. So it clearly like hit a nerve among people who really wanted to see what this was about, Beyonce's music in a cathedral. And so it got a ton of attention the first time she did this, like maybe 2016, 2017. And so now she's created a whole program where she has traveled the world providing the Beyonce Mass in different communities. And each Mass is different because she includes the stories of local Black women and their direct lived experience in that locality, in that geography. And so she recently did this in Seattle at St. Mark's Cathedral. Mm-hmm. And I was part of the team that helped coordinate it and learned a ton from her in the year of conversations leading up to it about what it meant for her to share this womanist-focused service that allowed Black women to see themselves in every person who was in front of them, not just one of the people who was leading the service, but the only people allowed to lead this service are Black women. And so there's a whole choir, there's singers, there's local Black pastors were the readers of the different texts. And it was an incredible experience to be surrounded by other Black women who you could see were connecting in a way that I haven't seen in my other church experiences, right? And so that is a service now that is kind of blown up and has gone beyond her initial idea of what that could be like. But she's an incredible preacher as well. So each of the services has an incredible sermon from her and her wisdom around the Hebrew scripture and how that connects to her womanist theology. So there is some online video from a previous service that she did, so you can find it. Now she doesn't want it recorded anymore, so it's just one service that you can find on YouTube. But she is really a profound thinker, and she really engages with culture and local women's work as well. Oh, and she's creating this program called the Black Girl Magic Academy to really provide for young Black girls and Black young women the experience of thinking and learning about womanist theology from a younger age, right? Because she says she didn't experience this until graduate school, being able to kind of connect with her experience and church in the way that she wants other people to experience that. So, other cool things happening. So, Gilead Church in Chicago is a United Church of Christ, Disciples of Christ, new church ministry in Chicago. That's a queer storytelling church is how they describe queer storytelling church in a bar is how they describe themselves. So they used to meet in a bar pre-COVID, and they're focused around kind of, I don't know if you're familiar with the Moth storytelling kind of model. One of the pastors has a lot of experience with the Moth and other storytelling venues. So they their tagline that you can kind of see there is tell true stories, throw great parties, worship beautifully. And they like to say, we're reclaiming the spiritual practice of feasting, i.e. throwing parties. And they say, we eat tacos, we brew beer, our Easter service is a dance party because it's fun. And we think fun comes from God. Because it's lonely and it's hard to make adult friends. Because the whole Jesus thing was supposed to be about good news. At Gilead, we share good news that's actually good. Not the churchy good news that if you believe certain things, you won't be thrown into a lake of fire with everyone else. That doesn't sound good to us, and it's not true. We want to share the good news that you are loved, that the world as God intends it is one of justice and liberation and joy. That when you find that joy in a real friend or some killer El Pastor tacos or jumping up and down singing at the top of your lungs, you're bringing that world of love into being. I love that, and I'm very inspired by these folks. And so here's a brief interview with Vince, one of the pastors who talks about this. Sorry.
I'm Vince Amlin, and I'm one of the co-pastors of Gilead Church Chicago. We've done several beer release parties. That's kind of like a regular, you know, standby for us, including one that was like a tiny apocalyptic carnival, I think, was the language that got used in the Religion News Service article about it. We did an All Souls Day party on a moving train. Maybe Alexa told you about that, but we rented out a Chicago L train, took it around the city. We've heard from a lot of folks that our kind of like dogged determination to party and to laugh and find joy together have been life-giving, you know, through the pandemic. There have been, and I think it's true, you know, at all times, like there are always things to be heartbroken about, and it's important for the church to provide space for that. And also, we need to party, we need to enjoy each other, enjoy life, that mm-hmm. enjoyment is a kind of praise to God for the world and for life, and also it's the animating force that allows us to go back out into a heartbroken world and care for it and care for each other. You know, it's a reminder, it's a being super churchy, it's a foretaste of, you know, what of the promise that I'm holding to about, you know, what life is supposed to look like and taste like and feel like and sound like, that it is, that we are created for joy, created for beauty, created for party, and we have to practice, because we practice all the bad stuff.
Funny. Yeah. So here's some pictures of their parties. It's hard to see, but they're on the moving L train for their All Souls Day party, telling stories. And here's the apocalyptic beer release party, because it was during the pandemic, so it was like outside in the cold. And then this is one of their first Easter parties in the bar with a disco ball and dancing. So they take this very seriously. This is pictures from their most recent Easter dance party. Now they're meeting in a church gym, so instead of meeting in a bar for COVID reasons and stuff. But they really do have a good time together and bring new friends into their party celebrations. And so their other commitment they decided was to make every congregational meeting a dance party. And they wrote it into their bylaws. I mean, these people are very goofy, but they're so much fun. And so they actually did just recently elect leaders. You know, they started as a queer church, so that's why there's an asterisk there. They just had to write their official statement, and they paid the bills when this is a song about paying bills. Inspired. I wish every business meeting that had budgeting also had dance breaks in it. And I find like that would be a much more fun church to be a part of. So I love their commitment, like you said, their dogged commitment to have fun, and they like work so hard and they're so creative to come up with all different kinds of fun. But I love their example. So Brené Brown has also said it takes courage to say yes to rest and play in a culture where exhaustion is seen as a status symbol. And so I'm wondering if you want to take a little bit more time to think for yourself, what ways do you say yes to rest and play when you're not at Holden? What is most restful to you? And, I thought I had this as the next slide, but has your community, whether that's a faith community or another group that you're connected to or part of, made space for rest and play? I mean, have you written it into your bylaws? have you found a way to structure your life, whether it's in your family life or your workplace or your church, to make space for actual rest, for actual play? And I know some of you are pastors, that can be even harder to take that idea of Sabbath rest, that space for coming together for Sabbath is supposed to be a holy and restful place. So maybe especially, how do you find other places of rest and play? But also, what would it look like to take seriously that as a community we need to find a way to rest and play together? So maybe just, Sarah, did you want to offer something? Yeah, great.
Well, I wanted, yes.
A
group of us owns a property out in Michigan, and one of our members, who was a UCC pastor, but even during the time, but all the time I have known him, everything, it's incorporated in what he says, is play.
Yeah.
So what people might consider work, he says, yeah, I'm going to go out and play, whether it's creating a garden, whether it's marching on the line or something. He uses the word play instead of I'm working oftentimes. Now, and he works harder than anyone I've ever seen. You know, in a lot of ways, I'm worn out. But, you know, so that's another way to think of play, is that the separation
can be dangerous.
Can be dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know the pandemic actually forced me into doing some art projects with my kids that I usually find too messy or too much work to do. And so actually spending some time doing that kind of artistic play with my kids has been a beautiful part of being forced home for the pandemic. So, yeah, if you have other examples you'd like to share with each other, ways that you've actually found in your daily life to rest, or ways that your community has made space for play, maybe just hold on to those. And I'm going to introduce these activities, and if you want to converse while we do this final activity, you can, or share stories, that's great too. But the practices I want to share are forest bathing and blue mind. So I'd heard of forest bathing before, and it's the word that I won't try to pronounce because I don't know Japanese pronunciation. But the Japanese practice that promotes visiting the forest for relaxation and to improve one's health literally means forest bathing. So this idea of going to a forest, not for a hike, not for a destination, but to just sit and take in the forest, right? And so there's actually people now who are certified like forest bathing, like facilitators. So you can find forest bathing groups in your community, perhaps. Who go out into the to a wild place, to a beautiful forested place, and take in and find space for silence. I don't recommend doing it by yourself here because of bears. You know, like, don't be quiet for too long by yourself in the woods where there's bears. But it can be a beautiful thing to do in a park or somewhere else near you, just to really sit and take it in. So blue mind refers to the ways our mind changes when we sit and look out at water. And for those of us who live near a body of water, maybe you know that this is something relaxing. This is a picture from Point Defiance Park, Owen Beach, where I live. And I love, you know, just sitting on the beach and staring out. And there's something kind of transformative and meditative about just watching the waves, whether it's at an ocean with crashing waves, at a lake with just the little ripples, or at a river. There's something really powerful about taking time to be in silence in the presence of water and of trees. So I encourage you to practice this wherever that might work for you. And then contemplative art is, wide-ranging art practices that can be contemplative and restful for people. Many people have gotten into coloring pages over the last several years. And I find that quite helpful for meditative practice because it's focused, you know, and it gives my hands something to do so my mind can rest. Some of you might be familiar with the practice of making or creating mandalas from, I think it comes from Indian culture, but this idea that circles are very meditative, and so creating patterns that begin with circles and kind of grow can be really meditative. So I'll bring that into our simple repeated drawing idea. Listening to music and playing with clay or Play-Doh, whatever you have available to you, is another way to kind of focus and meditate in a way that for me is much more helpful than pure silence. Pure sitting in silence has never been very effective for me because my mind just starts running. And then there's found image collages can be a way to kind of draw inspiration and rest while you put together images in new formations. And there's actually a group called Soul Collage that, again, facilitates this in a really careful and helpful way. So you can go to a Soul Collage class where they'll provide images and encourage you to do a thoughtful contemplative practice of putting images together and see how they speak to you and how they become a prayer or a meditation for you as well. But what I wanted to introduce was the idea of a simple repeated drawing. This is very simple, and I should have brought an actual example. The one that's most effective for me is just writing spirals, which kind of for me builds off the idea of mandalas. But you could do it with just simple lines. But the idea of just making lines and slowing yourself down while you make lots of lines. They could be long lines. They could be short lines. This is the most simple thing ever. But if you need to, like, take a breath, or if you find yourself, like, in a racing kind of anxious place, I find this to be super helpful. Or if you're in a meeting that's very stressful. Or spirals, right? So I do a lot of spiral doodling. But taking it as a contemplative practice to just start doing multiple spirals and slowing your breath and slowing your movements down while you do it. And one way you can do it is to kind of perfect your design to make it more even. And that helps your body slow while you're doodling. So this could be any kind of drawing practice that feels right to you, whatever, you know, repeated pattern or repeated concept. You could do colors so that it can be more of a beautiful art practice. So I have a couple of my spiral designs that have kind of explored different color themes, you know, and you can kind of build on them. But like you can also do like a mandala where you're doing a circle design and then adding circles to the circle. And so this is so simple, I feel like kind of almost silly sharing it, but it's actually, I find, a very contemplative practice for me. And so you could take multiple colors. I encourage you to do this for a few minutes. You can do this while chatting with your neighbors about finding rest, or you can take this somewhere else, or just take a deep breath and move on from this place. But I wanted to offer that as a potential way to find some rest for your mind and for your body by doing a really easy practice. So thank you all for coming. I encourage you to share your stories of rest, the ways your churches or faith communities have found ways to encourage or practice rest together. I'd love to hear some of them, but I encourage you to say, if you didn't write your name down for resources, please do. I'll stay here to chat if anybody has questions. Oh, yeah.
Can I ask what blue mind is?
Oh, sorry. It's just a term for what happens when we sit and relax and look at water. So it's like forest bathing. It's like an idea that says something changes in us when we sit and look at the water. Yeah.
Talita's book.
Oh yeah, I was gonna read a piece of it and I totally forgot. I also shared this resource with some friends, but In Deep Waters. This is a book my friend just wrote, Spiritual Care for Young People in a Climate Crisis. So I'll leave this out if people want to see it. She also speaks a lot about being at the ocean and being in the forest because she lives in California, and so they visit Lake Tahoe with the youth in her church. But she has spent several years ministering to youth and young adults who are facing climate crisis, right? And she's put together some spiritual practices for how we can take seriously the concerns of younger folks in our lives, whether that's our children or grandchildren, community members. And she talks a little bit about the importance of taking Sabbath and how it's really hard for kids today because of technology. Yeah.
What's her name?
Talitha Amadea Aho. Her last name is Aho, A-H-O. And it's Fortress Press. I'll leave it out if you want to look at it. So, sorry, let me close with this. And then I invite conversation or practices. In the Godly Play creation story, day 7 is a blank paper card with no symbols or instructions on it at all. Different people remember the gift of the seventh day in different ways, whether that is going to church or synagogue or just settling somewhere in your home. It could be any special place where you give thanks for all the gifts God has given us. Many children want to fill the card in with religious symbols, but teachers are taught to resist that urge, leaving the seventh card blank and open like the Sabbath itself should be. Can you imagine a whole day stretching out before you? Whether it happens on a Sabbath day or on your average Tuesday, spending non-productive, non-consumptive time in God's creation heals our souls in a way we profoundly need right now. The natural world is good for us, psychologically speaking. Our brains are hardwired to respond favorably to the sound of the ocean, the sight of tree branches, the smell of dirt. Our tightly wound achievement complexes slowly unravel in the presence of still water. Though we may worry about the health of the natural world, it still has the power to heal us. Generation Z is missing out on this kind of non-productive, non-consumptive time spent in nature. Many of them lack time at work, at school, and extracurriculars pile on in a world of high competition for scant resources. The attention economy effectively wires them into their apps, constantly working to keep their eyeballs on the advertisements. Others grow up in areas without accessible wild places or even parks. Access to nature tracks with wealth, of course, and varies by race due to our nation's segregationist housing policies. And Generation Z, being the most racially diverse generation in our nation's history, is acutely aware of this division. The ability to sit and contemplate a tree should not be a luxury. Falling down into the grass to come eye to eye with the wonder of a grasshopper should not be a right reserved for those who have purchased their own plot of grass. Everyone needs a day of rest, not to labor, not to side hustle, not even to perform for your app audience, just to simply be. Ultimately, we learn to relax and float in God's goodness and love by letting go of the need to do things well. Though our great achievements give us confidence, our non-achievement days teach us how to truly rest and trust in the goodness that we do not need to earn. So with that,
I just had to respond to that because one of the things that I think I came to realize maybe a decade ago is that we're immersed in a society that teaches our young people from a very early age very poor work-life balance. Okay. And it carries through college and then into careers. So from sports to school to college, they learn how to push themselves beyond their physical limits, and they suffer for it, but that's the way we believe we should live.
Yeah. And so often, Brene Brown talks about this a lot, we turn to numbing instead of to actual rest, right? Because we're trained now through our apps and through our screens to numb ourselves instead of to actually take in what our body needs as rest, right? So I think that's so true.
And I just want to make one comment. I've noticed being at Holden this time more than any other time, I appreciated an orientation. Someone said, you may come to a staff member and we're not working.
Yeah.
And we're going to have you go somewhere else. We have our boundaries. Like I've felt like things aren't as busy at Holden as they have been. Maybe it's a little early in the summer, but it just feels like there's a lot more space. And so I think even Holden is making that transition.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a comment that just jumped out at me from your slides, but we've had a group at our church called Walk and Talk that started this spring. And on Wednesday mornings, an hour, and sometimes with a destination, it's longer. And last week, a member of the evangelism committee said, next time you do Walk and Talk, would you be willing to distribute flyers for some upcoming summer family nights if you're in a neighborhood? And I said, yes, I'll ask. Actually, it was to happen this week, so we've been gone. But I thought, now that's kind of adding a job. I shouldn't have said no. This is a time for play and relaxation, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Finding boundaries is hard.
Multitasking.
Yeah, a couple of the people that I've quoted here have other sections about multitasking and how that has led us away from the rest. I think that's in the Brueggemann and some other places too. Yeah. Great. Well, I hope you'll take some moments for rest. If you want to try the spiral drawing or the line drawing, it's certainly welcome, or anything else you'd like to do in this space. But thank you so much for coming. Thanks for sharing your stories and comments. And I'd love to stand around and chat and hear a little more if you'd like to. So, thank you.
Thank you.